Back with you on the John Chuckery Show, live in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hanging out here tonight as we are watching some Braves baseball. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. 404-741-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to be a part of the show. Odyssey app is how you catch us when you're on the go. Social media, you can find us at 929 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And, of course, the best way to catch us is through my personal Twitter page, at JMCH316. This, of course, your night look at all things Atlanta Falcons. It is the Falcons flyover. So, the Falcons have signed another wide receiver. 6'3" wide receiver who spent his first four seasons with Green Bay after being undrafted out of Illinois. Geronimo Allison has gotten a contract after his tryout with the rookie camp, mini camp, over the weekend. Said that he signed with Detroit in 2020, opted out because of COVID-19, went back to the Lions last year, but was only in three games and didn't record a catch. Okay, here's what I'll say, because this has become the theme that some people are throwing out there. Man, they got all these big wide receivers in this thing. That's great. Do we have receivers that can play? That's what I care about more than anything. I don't care if they're small, big, what have you. Do we have receivers that can play? You know, I want to see a guy like Auden Tate and see what he really has. He may have nothing. He's a big guy, but can he catch? Brian Edwards, big guy. He was 57% catching the football last year, like 57, 59%. Was below 60% last year catching the football. Can he catch? I know they're all big. I need guys who can play. See, that's the thing. And I'm not knocking what they're doing. But, you know, at the end of the day, just like with the draft, I don't care if we get one starter or five starters. What I care about is, do I have a guy that in a year or two, we're talking about being first team all NFL? Do I have a guy or two that I drafted that's first team all rookie his first year, then first team all NFL his second year? That's Tristan Wirfs. Or did I draft Micah Parsons, who is defensive rookie of the year, up for the defensive player of the year award, first team all NFL? Did I grab those guys? I hope that we can find some guys who can perform out of all these wide receivers. I could care less that they're all 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". That means nothing if they're no good. So, you know, this running narrative about, man, the Falcons, they love size and this is what their MO is. Okay, I want my MO to be that these guys are good. You and I couldn't tell anything about Geronimo Allison other than people would be like, oh, you know, man, he was was 6'3" and all that. And he had a 1,000-yard season with the – or not a 1,000-yard season. He had 89 catches for 1,045 yards in total with the Packers. I'm just saying. I mean, I hope one or two of these guys works out. I really do, because it would certainly be better. But we'll just have to see what happens with these guys. So that's why I say I'm excited for training camp to get here just to be able to see where we're at with all of this, right? That's what I care about now when we get to the end of the day with all of this. All right, let's see here. Trey Webb, another guy that they signed over the weekend after his mini camp. So, okay, I mean, they've found a couple of guys that they want to bring into training camp. I'm sure there'll be a few more guys that they have at the end of the day, but we'll see what this all means. We'll see what this comes to. You know, again, you're just trying to find some diamonds in the rough, right? That's all you're trying to get here at this point with some of these guys. So we'll see what happens with all that. All right, let's get to some clips here. Can't find my this other story that's kind of ticking me off. This one particular story I was looking for. All right, here we go. Let me get this story real quick before we get to the story. Pro Football Focus is grading all of the off seasons, and here's what the Falcons have gotten so far in their offseason. Offseason grade overall, they give him a B+ with an A draft grade and a below average grade on free agency. Quote, on one hand, the Falcons probably downgraded a quarterback in a fairly significant way. On the other hand, they created a situation by openly courting Deshaun Watson. It was time to rip the bandage off and begin a rebuilding process for a franchise that should have begun when the new regime was hired. Well, again, that sounds good to say that, except that in the NFL, you're trying to win and you have money and things like that. It's always easy to just throw those things out there when you don't contextualize the situation. They weren't ready to move on. I mean, that's easy to say in hindsight they should have moved on because, again, they weren't ready to move on this year. Somebody needs to tell some of these writers that you know that they weren't ready to move on this year either, right? If they had not pursued Deshaun Watson, Matt Ryan would be here and be the starting quarterback, right? Do you think that these guys understand that or know that? See, again, who watches and covers the Falcons every single day, us or them? Anyway. Trading away high-level quarterbacks really a good move, but it may have been a necessary destructive step for this team to move forward. They secured a solid bridge in Marcus Mariota, and they drafted Desmond Ridder. Okay, so they get an A for their draft, below average for their free agency, and a B+ overall. So that's good. I mean, I think they've had a pretty good offseason, other than the fact that it seems like we've signed every former player, coach, general manager that the Chicago Bears have had in the last 2 or 3 years. But other than that, I mean, you know, they've done some good things. I don't really have that much of an issue with it. I'm still not crazy about the position we took at 8, but I like the player. And I know after watching him in shorts and T-shirts this weekend, he's going to be the greatest receiver in the history of the league, right? He's going to be Randy Moss. He's just going to put his hand up in the air, and he's going to have, you know, 100 catches for 1,500 yards and 20 touchdowns. Anyway, I'm being facetious by all of this stuff. Can you tell, like, some of these people just get a little over their skis real quick on all these things? All right. Let's hear from some of the folks that were there. Let's start with Drake London talking about how the leadership of Desmond Ridder is already being felt.
He's a guy I want to be around. He's a guy all of us want to be around. You know, he pulled us over right now and was like, we messed up a lot today. Yeah, that's just part of being a rookie and day one. But he brought us over there and was like, hey, we got to get this together. Excuse my language. But so we got it together, and that's just the leader he is. So I'm following his footsteps.
That's what I love about Desmond Ridder. I said it the day they drafted him. It's my favorite draft pick. One is the fact that they weren't afraid to go draft a quarterback in a fairly high manner. I mean, not just a sixth or seventh throwaway pick, right? Right. They didn't just waste a bottom tier pick and just bring a camp guy in or an undrafted free agent like Felipe Franks in. You know, they used some draft capital to bring in Desmond Ridder. I love it. I don't know what he's going to be, but you can't not root for that kid. Here's London talking about using his physicality to the best of his ability.
Football is a physical game. It's a game of physicality. And if you don't have that, I mean, I think you're losing part of the game. So I try to use that to my best of my abilities and use my attributes as much as I can. I'm going to use it in any way I possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, that's how he's made his rep and his bones. He's not the fastest guy. He's made his rep and his bones by being able to go up and get it and take it away from people and using his physical size and strength for it. So he's not outrunning people per se, but he can do basically everything else. All right, is Drake London talking about wanting to work on the mental side of the game as well?
Just the mental part of the game, you know, learning all the plays, you know, getting right with all the phrasing and everything like that. And I'm working on that right now, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, look, that's the biggest thing about going from college to the NFL is just being able to adjust into that part of the game, right? Just grasping being – I mean, look – you're a paid professional now, right? There is a difference in that. You ain't got to worry about school and this and the other. But now you have a full-time job, and now you're getting paid for it. And now you have different responsibilities than you had even in college. And your schedule isn't all laid out all the time. You have to make some good decisions about it. It's not just the on-the-field stuff for these guys. It's the off-the-field stuff. Oh, you mean I'm coming to Atlanta from the University of Southern California, the fight in Wendy, Lauren, and Alexis? Did anybody ask him that? Does he call him the fighting Wendy, Lauren, Alexis? But anyway, you know, I have to come to Atlanta and I have to get someplace to live and a car or this or that or whatever like that. So it's a whole different world for these guys. All right, Arnold Ebiketie talking about the consistency is king for pass rushers.
comes down to consistency. Average pass rusher can do one play at a time, but consistent pass rusher can do almost every single play. So it really comes down to being consistent and working on your craft and studying the game.
Yeah, look, what's a consistent pass rush? Because I've not seen one. I understand the words that were coming out of his mouth. I can tell he's a Falcon fan watching him the last handful of years. I haven't seen anything like that. I wouldn't know what that looks like. I'd have to watch another team in the NFL. I'd have to watch Pittsburgh or the Browns or somebody like that, the Cowboys. I'd have to watch somebody like that to get an understanding of what consistent pass rush is. Because I haven't seen anything like that here. We had a guy last year that started 14 games that had three more quarterback hits and the same amount of sacks that I did. Actually, take that back. He had three more hits and the same amount of sacks as Steven back there, who's our fill-in of our fill-in of our fill-in of our regular producer on the show. So, Steven, you tied Steven Means. By the way, he has your same name, too. You and Steven Means, the two Stevens that we have around Atlanta or had, you both had no sacks last year.
I'm going to see if I can get an invite to camp this year.
Yeah.
You never know.
Right. I mean, you had as many sacks as he did. All right, here's Desmond Ridder talking about if he has a chip on his shoulder.
Yes and no. You know, at the end of the day, I was the second quarterback taken off the board. I obviously wanted to be the first one, but kind of saw how this draft went. Saw that, you know, everyone was slipping and, you know, a lot of wide receivers taking whatever it may have been. And I'm just blessed to have this opportunity to be out here, play this game I love. And a beautiful city, a beautiful place, beautiful facility. So, you know, yes, I am going to take it and use it as a chip. But no, that's not, you know, something that I think about every single day.
I love this kid. I'm saying this with all due respect. And I explained why last week in vivid detail. I hope the dear God Almighty that he doesn't start week one for this team. Not a knock against him. I don't want him having to be thrown in to be a starter. And I certainly don't want him to have to start immediately behind this offensive line. Unless you're telling me that we're about to sign Trent Williams and Quentin Nelson here in the next month, I don't want anything of him getting behind this offensive line just yet. Here's Ridder talking about he and Mariota knowing that it's a competition.
Marcus is a guy that's played a lot of games in the NFL, obviously a tremendous college career. So, you know, you have to give respect where respect is due. And that's one guy that, you know, that I have to. So just being able to come out here and learn. But just know at the end of the day, and he knows too, that, I mean, it's obviously a competition or else we wouldn't be here. And so, you know, at the end of the day, too, it's not up to us who makes that decision. It's up to the coaches. So if we go out here and we both put our best foot forwards and we leave it out of our hands and we leave it out of our hands. But at the end of the day, we're working not only to better ourselves, but to better each other in everything that we do.
Well, again, I am rooting for the kid. I don't want him to start. I don't think he needs to start. I don't know truly, unless he just is so good that you can't not start him, I don't think he starts. I don't see a reason to push him real hard. All right, let me jump down to Arthur Smith as he talked about his new addition in Bryan Edwards.
So we agreed to the trade for Bryan Edwards. You know, we're excited. The guy that we think fits, so be in that receiver room, compete. And help us. Guy can win outside one-on-one. Guy certainly knows how to play in traffic inside the numbers.
Well, no doubt about it. You know, he's got another guy that has some size. I will say in reading things from the Oakland websites, blogospheres, and everything else, they say that his most production comes as a big slot wide receiver. He's a big guy, and if you think of slot receivers, you don't normally think of big guys, right? But according to a lot of what the Oakland blogospheres and reporters and all that said, is that his best use in that in their offense was being a big slot receiver guy. Okay. I mean, that's fine. Whatever his role is, I hope he can come in here and be a part of something. All right, last clip. Let me get real quick Tyler Allgeier talking about how there's a lot of similar concepts here to BYU.
Yeah, no, for sure, because especially we're running a lot of similarities that BYU ran. So I think really just honing in all of those skills and learning the playbook, because it's a lot. Like thinking I already knew a lot of stuff from BYU's offense. Like this is a whole different offense, whole different scheme, but it's the same things, I would say.
Yeah.
So I think just really just mastering that and then just going on and perfecting him.
Another guy to see what his role is. He's definitely going to get some playing time. I mean, with all due respect to the running back group that they have right now, I mean, Patterson obviously is sort of one of the lead dogs, but you're not asking Patterson to run it 250 times, right? I mean, he's not built for that. He's not built up to be a three down, you know, run up between the tackles running back. So how they use a guy like Algier, who can get a lot of things done, especially in short yardage, that will be very interesting. It will be very interesting to see what his role emerges, and I'm curious to see what he looks like in the preseason. I mean, I definitely want to see, you know, him get a big chance to do a lot. I hope him and Allison really get a lot of look in the preseason. I mean, I'm not so much worried about Patterson in the preseason. I know they talked about playing guys, this, that, and the other, but I'm really interested to see what Algier looks like and what he can be with Kadri Allison. All right, when we get back, we're going to talk to our friend Christy Dosh. She's been very heavily involved here in the NIL, so we'll talk a little sports business with her coming up next. Chuck, we're hanging out in the Kia Studios. Sports Radio 92 The Game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, back with you on the John Chuckery Show, live in the Kia Studios on a Monday evening with you, 404-741-0929. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey app site, catch on the go, social media at 92.9 The Game. I'm at JMCH316 on Twitter. We're just about through a couple of innings up in Milwaukee. No score. Braves and Brewers will keep you up to date all night long as Ian Anderson is on the mound right now. But, you know, certainly NIL has been a hot topic. We've covered it quite a bit here on the show. I've been frustrated by some of the more recent commentary. So we head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Atlanta's Ford dealer, and she is our friend of the show. Christy Dosh is joining us. You can, of course, follow her on Twitter at SportsBizMiz. She covers sports business for Forbes, founder of the Business of College Sports, and she's been doing a lot of work with NIL. And Christy, always appreciate a few minutes here in Atlanta. Always good to talk to you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this is the and I apologize because I'm a simple guy, an older guy. My brain maybe doesn't work as well, so I get confused by some things. All of a sudden, the word booster has become in vogue now when it comes to collegiate athletics and money and all these kinds of things. All of a sudden, now the boosters are a big problem. Help me understand. So 30 years ago, when Fred Taylor was getting a bag full of cash, that wasn't coming from boosters and there wasn't a problem then? Or is it now just as the light is now shown on collegiate money, you know, the cockroaches are now being shown in the light instead of behind the wall and hiding from everybody?
Yeah, I think the concern is that now boosters are able to direct money to student athletes through NIL deals, and there are essentially no rules, no regulations, no guardrails, as the NCAA likes to say, to stop them. And we've seen these collectives popping up that are groups of boosters and fans who want to benefit the student athletes at their school. And I have to say, I have been talking to a lot of the collectives, and many of them are doing things what I would say the right way, but there's always going to be a few people who are going to spoil it for everyone, and that's what we're starting to see.
And Christy, but here's the other thing I'll say about this. So their proposal is we have to like stop this and all that. Why don't they make it a system where they work with boosters so you can work directly with them and give them avenue, whatever that is. I mean, if it's funding something that's based upon education, like, okay, you graduate in 4 years, you get this sort of grade, then there's a trust fund or whatever. So why is it the idea of shutting it down instead of working with the boosters and trying to come up with a better system so that they can still get the money but where everybody can see it?
Well, that trust fund idea was something that was actually floated years ago. I think there was a judge in one of the cases against the NCAA who mentioned the trust fund kind of set up. So that was weighed somewhere along the way and discarded. But I don't think the NCAA is going to stop boosters. You know, they had new guidelines that came out last week, and it didn't say collectives couldn't exist or that collectives couldn't work to create NIL deals for student athletes. All it essentially said was that collectives are boosters, and so they're subject to the rules around that. And my belief is the only thing they were trying to curb is the deals that are being made with high school student athletes that are inducements to attend a specific university. And the collectives are saying, hey, it's not an inducement. You know, some of them have contracts that say, doesn't matter where you go to school. However, we all know, you know, if you're an 18-year-old kid and somebody's giving you $8 million and they're from a collective that's associated with a specific university, what are the odds you're going to go to that university? Pretty good.
Sports business writer Christy Dosh joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Do you think that they are going to try to set a cap on what kids can earn?
No, I really don't. I think there would be some really antitrust issues with that. They're not going to set any sort of cap. They would be sued the very next day.
Let me ask you this, too. We heard about Gary. I went off on Gary Barta late last week talking about the idea of that one of the things they can do, and this is my problem when we get into these things, is his exact quote was, you know, the idea of making kids sit out a year if they want to transfer, and that way the boosters can't get them money and this and the other if they know a kid isn't coming. And he said that's something we can control. Isn't that why we're here now, is because the kids didn't get the freedom? You know, this idea of now we want to go back to sitting out a year to transfer and things like that. Okay, that's the old way that didn't work. Why would we go back to that? And I think that's the frustration I have, is there still seems to be this sort of old school mindset where you have guys like people like Gary Barta, but then you have Mike Bray saying, hey, shut up and figure it out. I like that approach better than the let's go back to some of the old ways to try to curb it for now.
Yeah, the concern is that having these two new things that essentially happened at the same time, NIL and the changes to the transfer rules, created this situation where it's just free agency all the time, which is not a reality we have in any professional league. And that's because the athletes are employees and they collectively bargain and, you know, they agree to be tied to a team for a certain number of years before they enter free agency. And, you know, we have all these other rules around what happens, you know, during certain years of their contract and their ability to become a free agent. We don't have that in college football because the student athletes are not employees. They're not able to collectively bargain. And so now what we have is total unrestricted free agency for everyone. And, you know, the result of that is that not only are players getting sort of picked off and offered NIL deals to go to other schools, but the schools that are kind of lower on that totem pole are looking around and suddenly half their roster is gone because it's been picked off by teams that can, you know, afford to bring those players up. And so I think something has to change because I don't think it can work like it is. I don't think that thing is going back to how it used to be, but I do think they're going to start exploring this idea of college football players being employees. The National Labor Relations Board, their attorney, has basically said, bring me a case because I think they are. So she's just waiting to declare that they are. And I think that would really change not just college football, but college sports in general.
You know, it's funny because 6 or 7 years ago, I had somebody on the show from the state of North Carolina. And I can't remember. I think it was the person who headed up the labor department or whatever like that, or one of the labor organizations in the state of North Carolina. And they brought that up about, okay, maybe it's time to make, you know, athletes employees of the state so that they can, you know, get all the same benefits that those people do. And people laughed at all that. It's funny to hear that now because, you know, all these ideas that people brought up in years past now all of a sudden seem to be a lot more viable than they were even 1 year ago.
Yeah, it gets messy fast when you start looking into rules about, you know, labor relations and collective bargaining, because in some states, employees of government entities can't collectively bargain. So does that mean that student athletes at public universities wouldn't be allowed to collectively bargain? In about half the states, the answer is yes. And so now you're looking at private universities having different rules than public universities, not to mention what happens to the funding for every other sport outside of football that depends on that football money to exist. So I think we're entering an era where college athletics could change dramatically in the next decade.
Sports business writer Christy Dosh joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. This is the term that scares, obviously, you know, college presidents and administration and things like that, unionize. And you mentioned it about, you know, collective bargaining, you know, because of professional, but those are all unions. Is that the next thing that the athletes themselves have to look at, is, okay, do we have to create a union? They threatened it before, and then all of a sudden there started to be a little bit of caving in of, okay, we'll give you more than three meals. We'll make scholarships more than a one-year deal. Is that still the word that scares college administrators?
Absolutely, because if you look at the finances of college athletics, even at the highest level, when we're talking, you know, Power Five schools that are financially successful, like University of Georgia and Florida and all those kind of schools, football and men's basketball are the only sports that make money. All of the other sports are essentially subsidized by the money that comes in from football and men's basketball. And so if college football either moves outside of the system, like some people have suggested that it go under the college football playoff and it's a separate entity and they just license the marks of the universities, but they're not actually part of the athletic department, or you go to this employment sort of model, anything that kind of shifts how the finances work now puts all those other sports at risk. And so all those other Olympic sports are now, I think, on the chopping block, if that's what we're talking about. And so then I think, you know, the U.S. Olympic Committee has to start looking at how do we develop these sports if universities can no longer develop them because the finances have changed so much. So I think it impacts more than just college athletics. It really impacts amateur athletics across the United States in every sport outside of football.
Christy, Steve Spurrier had a famous quote. He said that the NCAA is a 1950s rule book that's trying to govern in the 21st century. Do we need a complete revamp of rules, regulations, a constitution, whatever you want to call it, you put whatever term on it, but it feels like this idea of just trying to modify and change as we go is not working, that there needs to be, because look, even with recruiting and things like that, it goes beyond just NIL and transfer portal. Recruiting and all these things, when David Pollack stands behind a kid and gets a secondary violation because he was in the photo at a kid's high school, at a kid's collegiate signing, I mean, the governance and things like that, it seems like we need an entire new set of rules that fits in modern day sports, technology, society, and everything.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. So much has changed, particularly when it comes to technology and recruiting. And we do still see silly violations. You know, we had something a few years ago where I think a school got in trouble because they served cream cheese with the bagels. You know, that kind of stuff has already been thrown out. We've gone to unlimited meals. But ridiculous things like that still happen because I do think it is a very outdated rule book.
Let me ask you this. What has been the policy, too, of, as we talk about the transfer portal, the kid that's that was the quarterback, Ewers, the quarterback at Ohio State that went to Texas and supposedly he got a big NIL deal. So how are companies navigating the waters with these kids of, okay, is it based upon, look, we're paying you this money no matter what, or do they got to stay at a school, or are they having to kind of figure out how to navigate through this as well?
Yeah, the contracts actually cannot say that the student athlete has to play at a specific school or that the deal goes away if they transfer schools. It can't even be predicated on them playing. And we had a really good example at the beginning of NIL where LSU's quarterback Miles Brennan got the first car deal. And I think that was announced on a Friday, if I remember correctly. And it was this big deal that he had the very first car deal in college athletics. And then over the weekend, he broke his arm. And so Monday morning, everybody was like, what is this car dealership going to do if Miles Brennan doesn't even play this season and now they've signed this car deal with him? And the answer was, well, they got to figure out a more creative way to use him and market because they can't get out of the deal. It's not like professional contracts where they can tie things to performance and they can't tie it to where they play or even being on the roster. So once a brand signs an NIL deal with a student athlete, the only reason they could get out of it is if they had some sort of morals clause and you had a student athlete who got in trouble for, you know, drunk driving or domestic violence or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of byproduct because they decided to kick the can down the road. And Christy Dosh does a great job of keeping up with all this. Follow her on Twitter at SportsBizMiz. Sports business writer for Forbes, founder of the Business of College Sports. You can check her out on her Twitter page. A lot of good work that she's doing involving NIL. Christy, as always, appreciate it. Thanks so much for spending a few minutes with me here in Atlanta tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. So good stuff there. And I always like talking to Christy. She's pretty in tune and smart. If you don't follow her on Twitter, you should. She's very involved in NIL and does a lot of great work in trying to help kids and athletes find deals and work with them and teach them and a lot of good work that she's doing out there. So good stuff as always from Christy. All right, when we get back, it will be time for What's Bugging Chukri. I mean, how do you throw a no-hitter and lose? Well, it's been that kind of season, I guess, for this one team. Talk about that next. Chukri in the Key Studios on a Monday. Sports Radio, 910 The Game, Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back with you, John Chukri Show. Hanging out in the Key Studios on you with a Monday evening here. 404-741-0929. That is our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Odyssey app is how you catch us on the go. Social media at 910 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And follow me at JMCH316. We will talk some Braves baseball here at the top of the hour, as we'll talk about, obviously, Ronnie not in the lineup, but tonight. Still 0-0. We're now in the top of the fourth inning. Braves coming up here. Ozuna at the plate right now. So just one hit for the Braves thus far. So Ian Anderson's been fine. Three innings, three hits. No runs, two strikeouts, and a walk. He's got 56 pitches. Peralta's got 3 1/3 with a hit. No runs, three strikeouts, and a walk. He's got 49 pitches. So we'll see what these two guys can do. Two pretty good pitchers. You know, you talk about like third starter types of guys. Both these, you know, right there at the top of what some of those guys are. So let's see if Ian Anderson can hold him down, hold him at bay. Braves got to figure out something. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe get through this three games with Milwaukee, and you know, even if you lose two out of three, all right, then it's Miami and it's Philly and Miami. So you got to get some things figured out at some point. We keep kind of waiting for them, right, to suddenly show up and everything's kind of working out well. And we gave you some of the batting averages in May. Olsen's 208, Darno's 206, Riley's 204, Duvall's 209. Riley's only got a homer and 3 RBI. Darno's got a homer and 7 RBI. Duvall's got a homer and 5 RBI. Runners in scoring position has just been an atrocious number for the Braves. And sometimes they get contributions in the strangest places, right? Like Travis DeMeritt and some of those guys have been outstanding. But like Friday night, for instance, you know, we were here in studio. DeMeritt was on base 5 times and didn't score. How do you get on base 5 times and never score a run? I'm not blaming DeMeritt. I'm just saying you would think that would be impossible to reach base safely 5 times in one game and not score a single run. But guess what? That's what happened. That's what happened with DeMeritt on Friday night. So just frustrating. And, you know, it feels like even when the Braves win, they're always having to come from behind, you know, to get a win. You know what I mean? Even when they win, it's like, all right, well, like Boston, well, we're down like 3 runs and we have to hit a ninth inning homer to win. Or even against the Padres. What was that, Saturday? Was it Saturday that they won, Steven? They lost Friday, won Saturday, and then lost yesterday. So even Saturday was a come-from-behind victory that you had to rally and score 4 runs the Padres had scored 4 in the top of the eighth, and the Braves scored 4 in the bottom of the eighth to take the lead. I think it was 6-5, take the lead, and then hold them off in the ninth inning to get that win. So
it was nice that was the game people could regularly watch. It wasn't on Peacock or Apple TV or God knows what streaming services now.
It's funny, you know, because I don't have the Pineapple TV. You know, I don't have all these streaming things like Pineapple TV, Chick Flicks, FUBU, and all these kinds of things that people have. But you know what I do have, though? I do have the Peacock because I subscribe to it because of the WWF. That's all the pay-per-views and everything and all the old shows are on Peacock. So I've got the Peacock, but, you know, that's the only – and so I was watching it on my computer yesterday morning. Because how weird was that? 11:30 in the morning was first pitch? Is that because San Diego just was getting out of town and going back home?
I think that's what time they put those Peacock games on.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I don't know why they decided on that. Okay. But yeah, that seems to be the case. And I unfortunately was down pretty bad after a bachelor party this weekend, so I did not get to watch the Braves game on the ride home.
Now, the cool thing about Friday that we talked about is – a girl done good from Atlanta, Melanie Newman, had the call on Friday on the Pineapple broadcast. And of course she went to, you know, Etowah High School in Cherokee County. So she's a local girl done good and, you know, doing a lot of good stuff for the Baltimore Orioles and is part of their Apple broadcast and all that stuff. So good for her for doing all that. But yeah, that was funny because I had no idea, but I saw something that said that it was on the Peacock. And so I got on the Peacock yesterday and was watching some Braves baseball. They had Andruw Jones, by the way, was on the broadcast yesterday. He was doing the game with, I don't even know who, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea who the other two Hammond Ager jabrones were that were doing the game, but Andruw was up in the booth with those guys calling the game, so that was kind of fun because they were, and of course they did a lot of flashback photos. You know, he's got all kinds of photos with some of the different players that are from Curaçao and all that kind of stuff, so it was just cool to see him on the broadcast. But yeah, if you didn't have the Peacock, you didn't You didn't get to watch much of that game yesterday, but you didn't miss much. You know, after the Braves went up, what, 3-0, they were up 3-0 after Dansby's homer yesterday, and then they just kind of tanked from there. So we'll keep you up to date with what the Braves and Brewers are doing right now, as it is 0-0 here as we head to the bottom of the fourth inning. So Ian Anderson will be back out on the mound. Curious to see what Ian Anderson, how long he goes tonight. He's at 56 pitches through three innings. So you'd like to see him get, you know, five or six for sure, but, you know, as long as he can keep it economical. So, and he's been pushing in the 90s, you know, here of late. So hopefully he can get at least two more innings and not have any real long innings, and he can keep that pitch count sort of at a respectable level out there. So we'll see what happens with all that. First, though, speaking of respectable, let's get to something that we call What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You know how you know things are not going well? It's not the 9-26 record that the Cincinnati Reds have. It's not the 4-17 road record that the Reds have. It's the fact that yesterday, their two pitchers pitched a no-hitter in that game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. So you pitch a no-hitter and you lose. In fact, you pitched a no-hitter in eight innings to where the Pirates didn't even have to hit in the ninth inning. It's not like the Pirates grabbed their run in the bottom of the ninth inning. They scored it in the bottom of the eighth inning. Three walks and a ground out plated one run, where the two pitchers combined pitched eight innings, no hits, one earned run, nine strikeouts, but six walks, and threw 127 pitches. So you not only threw a no-hitter, you not only lost, and I think they said it's only the sixth no-hitter in the history of baseball to where you lose. And you lost to the god-awful Pirates. And you couldn't score a run on the Pirates. You couldn't score a run off the dreadful Pirates, who had three pitchers that gave up four hits and no runs in nine innings themselves. I mean, the Reds are getting to the point where they are laughing stock bad. I mean, it's crazy. You know, yes, they lost Castellanos. Left the Reds. He went to, what, Philadelphia, right? He went to play for the Phillies. And so, you know, yeah, they lost one of their big bats, but they are a dreadful team right now. And they are 4-17 on the year. And they didn't have Votto playing yesterday, so that didn't help either. But you mean to tell me you couldn't score a lousy run against the Pittsburgh Pirates, for God's sakes? And they walked six guys. They gave up more walks in that game, did the Reds pitching staff. Or I should say they gave up as many walks yesterday in that game as the Pirates pitchers gave up hits and walks together. Pirates gave up four hits and two walks. The Reds walked six guys in that game. And that's what ended up being the downfall was they loaded the bases with walks and then a ground out plated a run. Oh. You know things are going bad when you can't even pitch a no-hitter and you end up that way. And by the way, the Cincinnati Reds are really realistically trying to make a run at being one of the worst teams of all time in Major League Baseball. Now, they've actually been hot of late, and I use that in relative terms, but you know, they're 6-4 over their last 10. They've actually had a couple of winning streaks that, you know, they lost two in a row to the Pirates, but they'd won three straight before that. They'd won three out of four, you know, here recently. But it's crazy to think that they have nine wins on the season, and two of them are against the Atlanta Braves. So just under a quarter of their wins this year have come against the Atlanta Braves. Crazy to think about. But the Reds are all-time awful, and they're already at a minus 65 run differential, but it's hard. I mean, when you go into the lore of baseball as being one of the only teams in Major League history to lose a no-hitter, yeah, you know your season's going bad. And you do it to the Pirates, you know things are going bad, and that's what's bugging Chuckery. All right, Braves right now, as we said, they are 0-0 here as we're in the fourth inning. Right now, Ozuna and Riley have the only two hits for the Atlanta Braves as there's a couple outs there. And got to get the middle of this order going. You know, I talked about the other night, and we'll talk about Ronnie, you know, hopefully. I should read, too, Mark Bowman's tweet, because Mark had tweeted about Ronald Acuna Jr. earlier tonight. So this is what Mark Bowman had to say, is that Snicker said Acuna passed all the tests while running the bases and completing other exercises today. If he recovers well, Ronnie will likely play tomorrow. So that will be good news, because they obviously didn't put him on the IL thinking that he's going to miss enough time, and they could have done it retroactively. But if he's going to play tomorrow, then okay, he's back sooner than what the 10-day IL is. And look, there'll probably be a couple of these hiccups along the way. And I saw where Snicker, you know, was asked over the weekend about the idea of, hey, does Ronnie need to pull it back or this, that, and the other? He said, well, you know, as he gets older, he may have to change that. Well, yeah, everybody does that when they get older. But the last thing I want from Ronald Acuna right now is to pull it back. Like, he's a thoroughbred. He's a stallion. You don't keep him locked up in the horse stable. You let him go run free. And this injury is not directly related to his knee. Again, if there's anything that maybe they could have done a little bit differently, would have been to let him DH a little bit more versus keep pushing him out in right field. But their outfield defense has been so bad this year that I understand what they were trying to do. But in hindsight, maybe if you'd have just let him swing the bat, because that game against Boston where he got hurt and he hadn't played, you know, he didn't play since then, you know, he was running down the right foul line to catch a ball, running back toward the wall to catch a ball. You know, he was running all over the place. Like he was getting his exercise and his workout in, you know, out there in right field. Maybe the Braves would have been smarter to let him DH a little bit more early on, or not even so much early on, but mixing him in as a DH. Even if that means you play Ozuna in left like they're doing tonight, or you sat Ozuna, which wouldn't have been a bad thing, you know, either. Maybe letting Ronnie do a little bit more DHing and a little bit less out in the field might have, you know, avoided some of this. But, you know, again, it was the best news, you know, considering the situation, that no IL, take a few days off and get back, you know, into it. But if he could play tomorrow, I mean, and look, if he can, how about this? If he can swing the bat tomorrow, put him in at DH. If he can swing the bat tomorrow, let him DH and don't play right field. If you want to slow work him back into right field, do that. But right now, the Braves need everything that they can get offensively. They need guys on base. They need to capitalize when they get guys on base. They need to do a little bit of everything offensively. And I think that's been one of the frustrations, is just that you don't know from one night to the next what it seems like the Braves are going to do offensively. They can hit home run. I mean, there's two things that they do really well. They have lots of home runs and they strike out a lot. But they don't do a whole lot of other things all that well. Outside Ronnie, almost nobody steals bases. They don't hit with runners in scoring position. They don't hit with runners on third base. They don't do a great job advancing guys along. I mean, just sort of on and on and on. And I know people are like, well, eventually it's going to get better. I hope.
People said the same thing about the Hawks.
Yeah.
Kept waiting for it to get better, and it never did.
Eventually they're going to catch up to what they were last year. I agree with you, yeah. I mean, you don't want to wait, though, until, you know, you're fighting for a wild card instead of a division. Because the Mets have not shown that they're going away yet. And they're still waiting on DeGrom. Like, they're not – listen, we talk about Ronnie. You know, the best pitcher on planet Earth doesn't pitch right now. And I mean, he is the best pitcher on planet Earth. We can have arguments about, is Ronnie the best baseball player, you know, going right now? And I don't know that, you know, he may be over Otani or Trout, but we could have, like, arguments about it. There is no arguing that DeGrom is the best pitcher on planet Earth. And he's not pitching right now for the Mets. Now, Scherzer's obviously just otherworldly, you know, himself. How great was that the other night when Scherzer literally did not let the guy come out through the ceremonial first pitch? Who, I understand, I think he was the ambassador for Japan or something like that. Good. Good. I'm glad Scherzer didn't let him go out there. The hell with it. You don't break my rhythm, and I'm feeling good right now, so you ain't coming out for your first pitch. All right, when we get back from the top of the hour, it was still the right decision to push Ronnie. We'll talk about this next. Chuck Green, the Key Studios on Sports Right Now, the Game, Odyssey.com app.